Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee kurup, guten tag, ya weevi pa kat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan, from the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget Pharmaceuta Kill Vivisection Prison, Killitary Industrial Corporation, in the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster-bankrupt, corruptocracy-mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food-borne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Sam, Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Wait, is that an appropriate greeting? I mean, memorial means we remember someone who probably died, right? I mean, I think generally meaning in a war. So what I meant to say was, this is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and a sad Memorial Day weekend to you. I hope it's full of sorrow and tears, as it should be, if we mourn the dead of war. And since this is a vegan radio program, we are more inclusive on all social justice fronts, so we must mourn the deaths in the greatest war of all. We mourn the human deaths and the deaths of those other than human in the world war that ends all world wars, probably ending in human extinction and in an uninhabitable planet, the greatest war of all, the war on animals, in sheer numbers, the most massive massacre ever, a Holocaust a minute. Generations of genocide. The war on animals takes its toll. Who remembers even one of the tens of billions who gave their lives this past year to be buried in the grave of a human stomach? All of them are as harmless and innocent as an Afghani boy or Nigerian girl. But we are human supremacists, you know, a clever enough species to develop tools like sharp knives, but still primitive and unevolved enough to use them for mass murder of war and eating those victims of war, in a further demonstration of that unevolved primitive behavior, as war really is, huh? And there are always losses on both sides, so on Memorial Day, let's remember the human victims of the war on other animals, too. Perhaps you know some of them. Perhaps somewhere in your family. Every year more Americans die in the war on other animals than all other wars combined. And you can start with the Revolutionary War. Heart disease and cancer kill more Americans every year than all have died in all wars. And at least 90% of all fatal degenerative disease is caused by the consumption of animal protein and not much of it, as stated by Professor T. Colin Campbell of Cornell University, author of The China Study, the largest study of diet and health ever. So what does that translate into lives lost? At least 90% of all fatal degenerative disease, the war on animals, killing them, and then eating the war victims. How many lives lost, huh? How many dollars, right? There's your healthcare plan right there. The trillions and trillions of dollars flushed down the toilet. Of course, everybody's too constipated from eating animal products, so the dollars are really all that get flushed down the toilet. On Memorial Day, let's remember, Let's remember the dollar. Okay, I know. Who remembers the dollar on Memorial Day more than, why, the Vice President of the Humane Society of the United States? A salute to Joe Maxwell, one of the HSUS meathead clowns. I guess we have to, everybody with HSUS now is really a Ringling Brothers clown, right? It's a close association, HSUS, giving $16 million of donor money to Ringling Brothers. That's the racketeering HSUS. But to Joe Maxwell of the racketeering organization, HSUS, the somber occasion of Memorial Day is pig roast. Pig roast party time. As Joe Maxwell says on holidays, he goes whole hog. And he does raise 50,000 pigs every year, so I guess he selected, you know, one of the family, you know, to take that sharp, primitive, unevolved knife and make happy meat out of, you know, he says he treats the pigs like his children. Run, kids, run. Don't come to the family gatherings anymore. So, yeah, happy meat. Okay, that's like happy Memorial Day, you know, happy war, huh? Well, for the profiteers of war and the profiteers of meat, so-called meat, of course, it's a happy day. What do they care about the collateral damage, all the lives lost? No worry to them, huh? The millions of animals. So we have, you know, all the billions of animals who are chopped up and eaten. And then, you know, on top of them, the millions and millions of animals killed in vivisection, animal research, you know, weird animal experimentation, fraudulent science that doesn't get results, you know, and all of the money flush down the toilet for that. All of that, you know, all the animal experimentation, really seeking to find cures to eating the flesh and secretions of the victims of the wars on animals, you know, the war on animals. Collateral damage, so-called predator animals, you know, who threaten ranching, you know, collateral damage. All species whose habitat is destroyed by deforestation or grazing or ranching. And we'll be talking a lot about that subject on today's program. You know, that remember that rancher dude who made his stand a few weeks ago there? You know, the heroic, independent, iconic cowboy who stood up to the feds out there. Everybody's, you know, new favorite until, you know, that speciesist racist remarks came out. And then, you know, everybody, you know, ran from him, you know, like the cows would want to run from him if they could get away. But I think he was, though, as a consolation prize, he was sent a complimentary season pass to Clippers game. So it wasn't so terrible, I suppose, losing all of his new friends. But we are going to talk about ranching later in the program. We have Mike Hudak, and he was on the program some years ago, and as I was reminded by that rancher dude who did his stand a few days ago, I thought it might be nice to catch up with Mike. He wrote the book Western Turf Wars, The Politics of Public Land Ranching, and you'll be amazed at the environmental catastrophe that is, that nobody can approach because of the politics of it, you know. So we'll be talking about that on the show. And just as in any war, you know, the aggressor has effective propagandists to spin our heads in their direction, you know, however nonsensical the position may be, as in, you know, happy Memorial Day, right? Or happy meat, huh? Well, I guess to those who you know, don't take to the concept of you don't take Memorial Day to heart. To you, maybe it's just a fun, you know, now acceptable to wear white again, and a fun 3-day weekend barbecue to start the summer. Well, then I'd like to wish you a happy Memorial Day. weekend. But I can't do that either because as I see you load that Joe Maxwell humane pig body on your barbecue, well, HCAs will be formed. Heterocyclic amines. Heterocyclic amines are the carcinogens formed when you barbecue flesh. You can't get away from it, whether it's humane, happy meat, pig flesh from pig-killing vice president of the Humane Society of the United States, or chicken, or if you're barbecuing flesh, well, then it's the start of the outdoor family carcinogenic cuisine diet season for you and the kids. Don't worry, oncologists everywhere are celebrating. More yacht payments will be coming in for these wonderful 3-day weekends that happen throughout the summer. That'll definitely pay for their yachts. All of this, the war on animals. Many people do profit. Oh, and really, when you come down to it, the war on animals is the cause for other wars. Also, Tolstoy said, as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields. And, the wars are fought over resources like oil, water, land. Yeah. So, also now we have climate change and environmental refugees and all. But Obama will deserve that Nobel Peace Prize when it's drones over slaughterhouses. When it comes to that, when it's drones over slaughterhouses, that's when he'll deserve that Nobel Peace Prize. I wanted to, saying the. They have their propagandists, and the meat industry has there's the clown from HSUS also, Wayne Pacelli, who sells us on humane meat, right? And he also says that it's sustainable, but. I'll continue this discussion after the break. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. As I said, Mike Hudak coming up on the program. We'll talk about the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and also animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione coming up on today's program, which you can support by clicking donate at goveganradio.com. Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook goveganradio with Bob Linden, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. We're broadcasting now for 13 years, as heard on the Air America Radio Network and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations. We are happy to be with you live every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, where we talk about a bunch of clowns here, generally speaking. John, you have that Judy Collins selection. Makes me feel like I'm back in my old radio days playing music. So, last week here we go. Send in the clowns.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair?
Well, anyway, you can let it play low under me. John, let's fade it down. Fade it down. Yeah, okay. Oh, send in the clowns. Last week, the Humane Society of the United States and other animal liberation radicals says Humane Watch. Okay. Ah, let's dump out of Judy Collins. It's a great song, Send in the Clowns. But so the deal is, you know, Humane Watch is a strange website, but it's kind of fun to see when it talks about the Humane Society of the United States. And just basically, I don't know if you're aware of it, but $16 million of your donations to HSUS will now be paid, well, has been paid to Ringling Brothers Circus, making Wayne Pacelli, actually, well, he's a Ringling Brothers clown, huh? And So this is related to a racketeering lawsuit. So you have the Racketeering Humane Society of the United States paying $16 million in donations to Ringling Brothers. And so Pacelli says, don't worry, insurance will cover the $16 million, except HSUS doesn't have insurance. And then he says, well, don't worry, a lot of it will be paid by the Fund for Animals, you know, but Fund for Animals is part of HSUS, so HSUS will still have to pay it, and so really being kind of deceptive on that. And then Pacelli says, you know, it would be nice if Ringling Brothers took the $16 million and put it toward anti-ivory campaigns, and which, of course, you know, oh, great idea. Ringling Brothers will just love Pacelli's idea on that one. Pacelli, the high priest of humane meat. So there you have it. Wayne Pacelli suggesting that. Oh, why didn't HSUS take $16 million of its own money to put toward anti-ivory campaigns? Since he's suggesting it for Ringling Brothers, and they have $200 million in the bank, you would think he might do that. So I keep thinking, so Wayne Pacelli is to animal rights as blank is to the environment. Wayne Pacelli is to animal rights as blank is to the environment. Trick question, because if you said as Wayne Pacelli is to the environment, you'd be right on that also, because he sells meat as sustainable, and so does Bill McKibben, who also, you know, he's on this sustainable meat kick also, and meat is absolutely not sustainable. I don't, you know, we'll talk more about the, I wanted to talk about the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and why would one attend that if it's contaminated by HSUS, this racketeering organization? Do you think farm should exclude HSUS? I mean, since it's pro-meat and it's racketeering organization, like, what will you learn from them in their talks? Like, you know, how to pay a witness on the witness stand and, you know, try to hide it? I didn't get to the... what did he get to this about sustainable meat? Maybe later, maybe next week. But Mike Hudak is coming up next on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Lind, and we'll talk about the environmental devastation of ranching. It's Go Vegan Radio, goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. So I just want to give you a heads up where we are on the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Yes, thanks to the generosity of so many listeners and people who support this program, and Professor Gary Francione and the concept of promoting veganism and not humane meat. Had a a lot of donations come in, and support from some sponsors I'll be telling you about in the days and weeks ahead, who helped us attain our goal to where we were able to put the deposit on the Marina del Rey Marriott for next March 2021 and 22. It's going to be a great event, and I just want you to know that we're expecting to open up the registration on June 2nd, Monday. I'm working with the hotel. Actually, I have to figure out what we have to charge for registration. It'll be a number of meals included and all, because I mean the way that we work the deal with the hotel is that, you know, X amount of dollars in food and beverage to make it happen. So I'm working with the hotel to figure that out this week. And as Professor Gary Francione advised, maybe you'll want to save your money for that event as opposed to the ARCON, the so-called Animal Rights Conference that will be happening in July in Los Angeles. With such featured infiltrators as the Humane Society of the United States, the pro-meat anti-vegan organization, the racketeering organization, where you can learn how to give millions of dollars to Ringling Brothers, too. Maybe that'll be their talk there. And then, of course, many of the other groups who partnered with the egg industry and supported enriched cages. And so vegan advocates and activists want to get together, that's the plan. We have to update the website, but it's worldvegansummit.com, worldvegansummit.com, and we'll just we're making it up as we go along. It's a work in progress, but do we have amazing speakers? I mean, it's really going to be an amazing time. So we look forward to that. It's a short distance away from the Viva La Vegan Grocery in Santa Monica. You can visit that landmark also, Viva La Vegan. And also in Rancho Cucamonga with now like 8,000 vegan items in the store, you can visit VivaLaVeganGrocery.com. And as I mentioned, you know, some weeks back when that rancher cowboy was making his stand and in the news, and he was everybody's darling until they dug up all his racist remarks and everybody, you know, ran from him. There he was again, you know, that iconic vision of independence, of the wonderful cowboy who, you know, we appreciate because, well, I guess he can kill. He can kill anyone he wants and destroy as much as of the environment as he wants. So I guess he's really free to do that. Well, how well has he been doing that? Some weeks back, I quoted Mike Hudak, who was on the show some years back, and I thought, you know, let's invite Mike back and see what he might update regarding ranching and the environment. I mean, Mike was started his advocacy for removal of ranching from public lands in the late 1990s, and that has taken him to where he's made it about 150 presentations about it around the country. I had him on to talk about his book. He's the author of Western Turf Wars, The Politics of Public Lands Ranching. And he was the leader of the Sierra Club's national grazing team. And his nonprofit was Vibrant Public Lands, formerly Public Lands Without Livestock. Well, it's been a while, but welcome back, Mike Hudak. How are you doing today?
Hi, Bob. Doing fine.
Well, it's great. Great to have you here again. And so, what motivated you initially? I mean, there aren't many people, you know, who become directed toward, removal of ranching from public lands as their advocacy. How did that come to be for you?
It was really kind of a fluke. I had actually been looking at doing forest activism because that was kind of the topic du jour of the mid-90s, particularly in the Sierra Club. There was a movement within the Sierra Club from the early 90s to have the club oppose logging on public lands. And I wasn't involved in that effort, but I was on the sidelines watching it. I knew most of the people involved, at least through email. And I thought that would be an interesting topic to bring to the East, where I live. And then I was doing a presentation one time to a private forest owners association here in upstate New York, and one of the audience members, who didn't particularly like my presentation, I guess, asked me, well, what's the Sierra Club doing about grazing on public lands? And I had to admit that I actually didn't know. But then I looked at the club's grazing policy, and it looked to me like it could have been written by the livestock industry. And I'd been doing a fair amount of hiking on western lands during the summers throughout the 1990s anyway, so I'd seen a lot of impacts. And I'd also purchased Lynn Jacobs' book, Waste of the West, already a few years before, and had read parts of it, but hadn't read it thoroughly. And so I thought, gee, maybe there's really some opportunity here to bring the Sierra Club's grazing policy into alignment with its no-logging policy. And so I went off and read Lynn Jacobs' book for a month, and then went across the West for about 5 months, talking to every activist who had ever had anything to do with grazing on the public lands. And then I started doing presentations about the matter, and then I talked to some of the people who had been involved in that campaign within the club to oppose logging. And we talked about how we might influence the club to oppose grazing. And then I spent, I thought, well, okay, there's some opportunity here. And I spent 2 months organizing grassroots sentiment within the Sierra Club to oppose the grazing. And finally, after 2 years in September of 2000, we got a policy that's essentially a no-grazing policy, but a little bit of wiggle room. There were some people, particularly from California in the club, that were concerned about state lands in California, which I wasn't particularly concerned about. I was concerned about the federal lands throughout the rest of the West, but there's some state lands in California where they believe that it's necessary for some grazing of livestock to maintain habitat for some endangered species. I think some butterfly and maybe some kind of a other reptile or amphibian. And so I didn't oppose that. I got about 95% of what I wanted in the policy. So that's where we left it. And it hasn't backfired on us since, but there's been a lot of other political problems, not in the Sierra Club, but in the federal Congress.
Why would you think initially, though, the policy would have sounded like it was written by the livestock industry? I mean, wouldn't it have been more of a blank slate? I mean, what about other environmental groups? Have any of them addressed it, too? Or is their policy written by the livestock industry until somebody comes along to change it also?
I actually wouldn't say that it was written by the livestock industry. I'm saying it could have been.
Right.
I think what it was is that the mindset, I think, of the people in the Sierra Club who wrote it, number one, they were people from the West who had worked on the issue at the ground level. And I think that their mindset was that public lands ranching was here to stay. We're never going to abolish it. The best we can do is argue for the best management that we can get. And so it was really a grazing management policy rather than a policy for moving us, downsizing and moving us towards abolition.
And sometimes environmentalists seem to think that grazing, grass-fed pasture would be the natural way sometimes, right? Is it that
well, that's certainly true now. I don't believe that was the mindset of the people who wrote that policy back in 1992. Mm-hmm. I think they were, you know, these are activists who live in the same communities with the ranchers. And as I said, they'd been at it for a long time. They'd probably been at it for 15 or 20 years by that time. And I think that they had just come to that conclusion that it was here to stay. Nothing we can do. We just need to try to. And they also, there's things in the West called resource advisory councils that have come along where ranchers and environmentalists and other community leaders come together in some kind of collaborative process to decide how, or at least to recommend to the federal agencies how the grazing allotment should be managed. And so there you see the environmentalists, the conservationists schmoozing with ranchers, and
like the humane meat, like the animal advocates are schmoozing with the meat industry at times, yeah. It seems.
So that's the, I'm saying that's the social environment that the people who wrote that grazing policy for the Sierra Club came out of.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Okay.
So, that's a little different from the happy meat that I just suggested.
Yeah,
they were neighbors living together, basically,
yeah.
You're saying.
Yeah, so, and it's like, you know, how do we get along here and still work for better condition on these lands? Okay. Mm-hmm. These are not animal rights activists by any stretch of the imagination,
sure.
But they're concerned about the condition of the lands. Do we have native species of vegetation? Do we have good populations of native wildlife, or as I prefer to call them, free living animals? That's what they're concerned about. They're not concerned really about humane meat or anything else, but necessarily.
Mm-hmm. I like free living animals over wildlife. That's good. That's good. So, I don't know. We'll probably have a break coming up momentarily, but we haven't discussed at all, and we could spend some time together today. We have some time. We didn't discuss what's so terrible about it. Why would you dedicate yourself to removal of ranching from public lands? And, you know, I mean, it's really, enormous environmental devastation, and suppose we can start on it and we'll have a break and we'll just keep going and see, you know, but what's so terrible about it? Why should we care if there's grazing? And well, I mean, I know why I care, but well, there's the break now. So that'll be the lead-in question for when we return with Mike Hudak. It's Hudak, author of Western Turf Wars, The Politics of Public Lands. Ranching next hour, Professor Gary Francione. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. And I will keep you updated on when the conference registration will become available for the World Vegan Summit and Expo taking place next March. And I will do that through Twitter at Go Vegan Radio and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And also we'll update that World Vegan Summit. Website also. We're speaking today to Mike Hudak, who since the late 1990s has been an advocate for removal of ranching from public lands. He wrote the book Western Turf Wars, The Politics of Public Lands Ranching. He influenced Sierra Club policy regarding that and even had a nonprofit called Public Lands Without Livestock. So what's so terrible about livestock on public lands, Mike?
Well, a lot of things. Depends what perspective you want to take on it. The primary perspective is the environmental one, rather than, let's say, an animal rights perspective. But the environmental perspective is that there are just unavoidable aspects of ranching on these public lands that degrade habitat for hundreds of species of native free living animals.
Then it is animal rights. Wait, you know, you're just it's equal. It would be equal. The it's an animal. You know, I mean habitat. You know, mm-hmm. I always say, what's the environment? I mean, is it a bunch of rocks and sand? It's who's living there too, right?
I mean. Yeah, but I think when one goes to a typical animal rights conference and you start talking about free-living animals or wildlife, I think a lot of eyes glaze over, and they're thinking, oh, dear, the poor cows. And, yes, I feel very sorry for the cattle that are out there, but, frankly, if you want to take out the ranching industry altogether, I would say that the public lands are not the place to start, because it's a very, very small segment of the entire industry. And I would say that on balance, the biggest problem of it is not the harm to the cows themselves, but to those hundreds and hundreds of species of free-living animals. Hmm. Now, I understand that that's making that kind of a judgment might make me unpopular in some circumstances, but that's basically the way I see it. So, there's at least 300 species of free-living animals that have been documented to be negatively impacted by the presence of ranching on those lands. Hmm. More than 150 of those species have actually been given some sort of federal protection of because of those impacts. And what we're talking about here are degradation of habitat, streams that have been trampled, riparian forests. These are the forests that grow along streams in the West that have been destroyed over decades by the grazing of cattle. Those are trees that would normally provide habitat for birds and many other species, including insects. It's a whole structural problem with those trees providing shade for the streams and keeping the water cool that the fish live in, and so on and so on. So, you know, we're talking here about impacts on, you know, dozens of species of fish, birds, mammals, amphibians, reptiles, and even some species of butterflies, about four or five species of butterflies. So it's a massive...
Now, what do you mean by public lands, though? I mean, if you're talking about, you know, the removal of ranching from public lands, how much land are you discussing, really?
We're talking about 260 million acres of lands. This is about equal to the size of California and Texas combined. And these lands are spread across the 11 western states for the most part. They are lands primarily managed by the U.S. Forest Service or the Bureau of Land Management. There's some additional public lands that fall under other jurisdictions like the Department of Energy or the U.S. Army or whatever, but the vast majority of them are those two other regions.
Mike, let's take another break and continue. We're talking to Mike Hudak about ranching in the West, the environmental devastation. Next hour, Professor Gary Francione. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. For archives and to donate, go to goveganradio.com. Greetings once again. Welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, we have expanded to 2 hours for our national syndication through the Genesis Communications Network. Yes, the same people who syndicate Alex Jones. We're here to make him look normal. This program makes... And I'm told this is the first food show on the network, and... I never realized it was a food show. Okay, do we ever talk about food on this? I think we do sometimes. And I'm sure, you know, right now, all those ranchers out there, you know, this program is very popular with cowboys and ranchers, and they're probably listening today going, well, I didn't even realize I was doing so much damage. You know, I'd like to go vegan, too, or vegan, or... whatever. But I can't do that. You know, I'm here on the ranch. There are no vegan restaurants near the ranch. Or, you know, what can I do? Well, no excuse. Sorry. You can have vegan meals delivered right to your door, even at the ranch, from Greenlight Meals, greenlightmeals.com. Is there a computer on the ranch where you can get to a .com? GreenLiteMeals.com. And, you know, I mean, cowboys get heart disease, cancer, and stroke, too. So that's, you know, why they're listening to this show. And they can have their breakfast choices of tofu scramble and breakfast burritos and pancakes. You can still have, lots of great food and, vegetable soup, root vegetable soup, and vegan barbecue chicken out there on the ranch, and beefless stew, and trail mix. You cowboys out there on the trail, get some vegan trail mix from greenlightmeals.com and peanut butter cups and, just great stuff. Even I know you cowboys really want a smoothie, right? Let's face it, out there, you want it's gritty out there, so you can get a blueberry lemon zest or carrot cake or strawberry shortcake or PB&J smoothie, and if a little gut around you there because you're riding in the saddle too much, I hope it's a non-leather saddle. There is also personal fitness and nutrition consultation available from Green Light Meals, greenlightemeals.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and today we are talking to Mike Hudak, who wrote the book Western Turf Wars, The Politics of Public Lands Ranching. Before the break, we found that the land the size of California and Texas is environmentally threatened by public lands ranching. And when did this all start? I mean, aren't cows just natural to the environment, indigenous to the area out here? Mike, cowboys? They're cowboys, right?
Absolutely not. Cattle were imported from Europe beginning in the 17th century, maybe even a little before that, by the Spanish explorers. And so there has been some ranching in the beginning at a limited level in the Southwest for more than 400 years. But that really took off then around the middle of the 19th century with the building of railroads to the east and west coasts, and then the transportation of the cattle, beef, to Europe in particular, but also the major metropolitan areas on the east and west coast. And that's when the ranching really took off in the West, between mid-1860s and 1890 or so. Mm. And, of course, it's continued ever since.
And so what was most hazardous to the environment? I mean, is it the trampling? Is it the need for water? Is it fencing? I mean, what or maybe it's everything.
It is everything. And frankly, for your listeners who really would like to know the gritty details of this, I have a YouTube channel, which people can find very easily once they get into YouTube by just searching on my name, Mike Hudak. And I have 48 videos there, one of them called Ranching's Other Victims, Free Living Animals, which I developed for screening at the 2008 Animal Rights Conference. And it's very fast-paced. In 16 and a half minutes, you'll get an overview of all of these impacts, the trampling of the streams, compaction of the soil, and impacts of fencing on wildlife, migration, free-living animals. And also another aspect that we haven't even talked about, and that's the direct killing of animals of various species that the ranching industry just finds inconvenient to their business practice. We're talking mostly what we would call predators, like coyotes, wolves, mountain lions, bobcats, but also animals that they would consider to be competitors that are simply taking grass that they would rather see going into their cows. Animals like prairie dogs, for instance. Yeah. So I
talk horses, about right? The horses are Roundup, right?
Yeah, that's right, and horses as well.
Mm. Well, and it seems to be kind of dry out west, and it seems like cows need a lot of water.
Indeed. And that's what I'm saying. Cows are domesticated from a species that really was indigenous to lowland river valleys of Europe. And so to put them into an arid environment, or in some cases, high elevation environments in the West. I've seen cows above 10,000 feet above sea level in parts of New Mexico. Mm. To put those types of animals into those environments is the reason that we see those negative environmental impacts occurring.
Mm. And it's a very
heavy animal. It's an animal that weighs much more than any native species. And so it has much higher, the cows have much higher water requirements. They compact the soil. That tends to increase erosion and so on.
Mm-hmm. And so it pretty much permanently destroys, it's erosion, it becomes desert and barren and is kind of gone. And, lately I'm hearing, I don't know how familiar you are with, there are people who are saying, oh, if we rotate cattle, that's the way to do it, like move them from one area to another. That seems to be, there's always this excuse from people who want to eat meat to come up with something. And, lately, it seems that some people are saying, "Oh, you move them along and then fence them off in a certain area, and before they, But are you following that at all? Or
yes, I am. Mm-hmm. And in some environments that could result in less impact because they say that they're mimicking the natural migration of grazing animals. And to some extent, that might make sense if it's an environment where there are migratory grazing animals, such as the Great Plains were when the great herds of bison lived there up till the point at which they were almost exterminated in the late 19th century. But it doesn't make sense in an environment where there haven't been such animals, like most of the West where the public lands are.
Right. So, you wanted to get some results at some point, and I think you wanted to work within the political structure, and you were frustrated, weren't you? I mean, has the whole thing been? I mean, what can we do? What can we do if we're against this? Politics support this, right? I mean,
yeah. There's been a few basic approaches that people have taken over the last 20 years. There was something of a reform movement, a grassroots movement that existed through the early 90s, at least. And the Clinton administration did initiate a reform movement within the administration called Rangeland Reform 94 that was led by Bruce Babbitt, who was then the Secretary of the Interior. But after a lot of public hearings and a couple of years of work on that, what really mostly came out of it was just a lot of administrative changes that benefited the functioning of the Bureau of Land Management and actually did very little to improve to mitigate these environmental impacts that I've alluded to. And so I think that led to a great disillusionment on the part of the environmental activists in the West. And I think they basically said, well, geez, if this is the best that we can hope for after 12 years of the Reagan and Bush administrations, then you get the Clinton administration, and they get nothing more than that. There was no raising of grazing fees, which means basically no lessening of the taxpayer subsidy of the livestock industry, which we know now amounts to at least $115 million a year on the BLM and forest service lands alone, just in direct subsidies, and upwards of $500 million a year when all the indirect subsidies are taken into account. And so I think these activists realize that this is the best that we can achieve, even under as environmentally friendly an administration as the Clinton administration. What's the point? And I think that those people gave up. Well, then I came on the scene in the late 90s and kind of re-energized the Sierra Club then thought, well, maybe there's some kind of legislation that could be developed that would help to move ranching off of the public lands by encouraging ranchers to receive buyouts. Now, we could get into a big discussion about how these grazing permits actually add value to private ranches. And it's one of the reasons that a lot of these ranchers don't want to give it up. It isn't that they're making so much income. It's just that the value of their ranch on the real estate market depends on having those permits. And so they just don't want to throw that away. Well, if you want them off the public lands, then a way to encourage them to get off is to offer them some money for the lost value of their quote-unquote ranch by no longer having a federal grazing permit. Mm-hmm. And so legislation was developed, not by me, but by some other people working under the auspices of something called the National Public Lands Grazing Campaign.
Okay. Mike, we need to take another break. We'll have another 2 minutes after the break where we can finish that thought, and we'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Professor Gary Francione coming up. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Please like me. Never asked anybody to like that page, but try to like it if you can. You know, muster up, you know, if you can't do like, at least like, you know, just slight contempt, okay? Sorry, Daisy. Oh, my sweet little rescue chihuahua right next to me here. Very patient. Yes, the farmer's market was great yesterday. She's looking forward to the sweet potatoes and beets after today's program. And, we did hit the 7,500 we needed for the deposit on the Marriott in Marina Del Rey Marriott for the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming up in March. Thanks to so many donors, thanks to sponsorship of people like Nature's Flavors. You can go to naturesflavors.com, this wonderful vegan company with thousands of products. I mean, right now featuring Bertie and Bill's sodas, banana soda. I really like the ginger ale. That was great. I see that vegan chocolate brownies are sugar-free. The banana bread, no added sugar, gluten-free. So for baking, cooking, the brand name is Select. You know that name, S-E-E-L-E-C-T, Select, as in Select Tea, and, you know, Select, you know, chocolate brownies, Select banana bread, really great vegan company, vegan facility. We thank them for their support of the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and there'll be info about registration as soon as we know it. We'll send it out via Twitter at Go Vegan Radio and Facebook. We have another couple of minutes left with Mike Hudak and talking about removing ranching from public lands as if it could happen with politics the way that politics can be. He's the author of Western Turf Wars, The Politics of Public Lands Ranching, Mike, H-U-D-A-K, with a YouTube channel that explains it all. And you were also mentioning the frustration of various environmentalists who, it didn't matter if it's a Republican administration or a Democrat administration, you can't seem to get the legislation. So I say that's why we go vegan and the demand for so-called livestock products and everything, because what do we do here? But go ahead, pick up where we were.
We got a very short time. I'll give you a few things that I would suggest people do. Demand is a problem. And frankly, if more free trade agreements, international free trade agreements, get approved, it will make that demand for these products even greater. So I would urge people to oppose, for instance, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because that's going to expand Asian markets for Western beef, among other things. Okay, we do have a bill in the Congress right now that would facilitate the voluntary retirement of federal grazing permits. That bill is called the Rural Economic Vitalization Act, H.R. 2201. We have a Facebook page for it, and I would encourage people to like our Facebook page and to contact their congressional representative and urge him or her to co-sponsor that bill. Now, of course, with Republicans controlling the House of Representatives, I don't really expect that bill to move anywhere, but the more publicity that bill gets in the long term, the better for us. The other thing I would say is that there's another tactic altogether for making life a little bit harder for the public lands ranchers, and that's through litigation, okay? Because these public land allotments are actually managed according to management plans developed by the U.S. government. And the U.S. government often biases these plans in favor of the ranchers and against the free-living animals. And there are various environmental organizations that go after the government for that. And there's some that have been fairly successful in their litigation and getting some of these allotments closed down or otherwise managed in some more beneficial way for free-living animals. And there's several of those organizations. I would say that the most effective one, in my opinion, is Western Watersheds Project. I just want to point out, I've never had any personal financial connection with this organization. I've never been a consultant or an employee, and I don't expect to be.
But after that announcement, you'll get an offer. Don't worry.
But I respect their work, and I would encourage people to make donations to them so that they can be even more effective.
Well, thank you, Mike. Okay, well, it was great talking with you today about a problem that's basically the size of California and Texas combined. Thanks so much for enlightening us. It's Mike Hudak, H-U-D-A-K, and check out the YouTube channel. We have Professor Gary Francione coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. If you missed any of the discussion, it's archived at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. And as I mentioned earlier, we will update you as soon as we know what we're doing regarding the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and I'll get the word out on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. I'll let Professor Gary Francione know as soon as we know, and he'll get the word out too. The people at Vegetarian House are really celebrating, though. They're so happy that we hit our initial $7,500 goal so that we could put the deposit on the Marina Del Rey Marriott for next March 2021 and 22. I mean, it was when we needed $7,500 that Vegetarian House, before anybody gave $1, Vegetarian House gave $1,000, which meant all we needed was $6,500, and so many generous people kicked in and on a grassroots level and wanted to make this happen. So please, by all means, if you're in the San Jose area, go eat at this wonderful 100% vegan, organic restaurant, Vegetarian House, 520 East Santa Clara Street. And for catering, if you have an event coming up in the Bay Area, a business event, a wedding, visit vegetarianhouse.us. I mean, you can't go wrong with the food. I mean, and they're just so supportive. And then as the money was coming in, Sentient Lifestyle, Amanda Jordan got in touch and said, I have to sponsor. I have to help make this happen. I'll even create a T-shirt company, So, and I think the website is up already for sentientlifestyle.com. And so hopefully on June 2nd, we'll open up registration as soon as we figure out what to charge people to attend and exhibitors, and we'll figure that out with the hotel this week. I have to talk because the arrangement is a certain amount of food and beverage has to be purchased, so we'll figure that out and let you know. And as Professor Gary Francione said, well, maybe you want to save up your money for this one, instead of AR Con, the so-called animal rights conference coming up in July in Los Angeles, since you will have the racketeering anti-vegan HSUS influencing the crowd there, perhaps on, you know, how to tamper with witnesses or something in future trials. I don't know. How are you today, Professor Gary Francione?
Well, I'm fine. I mean, we're celebrating the Memorial Day weekend, and as one of the people on my Facebook page, Pax Nihimsa, has pointed out, how bizarre it is that we celebrate a day like Memorial Day to honor the people who died in wars by roasting the corpses of a lot of other animals or consuming animal products. It's interesting how we celebrate days, Memorial Day being just one, but we celebrate days in which we supposedly reject violence and we engage in violence. Thanksgiving's another one. You know, we're supposed to be thankful. And
every holiday has its massacre.
Yeah, it's really appalling. But you know, look,
I discussed that in the beginning of the show. I discussed this war on animals and the memorial and all of, you know, I'm with you.
One thing I want to say, and I'm saying is, you know, you were joking before. I want to be totally serious. I really believe that if people who are listening take veganism seriously, regard veganism as an important principle of nonviolence, an important part of what peace means, an important part of what justice means, then I hope they come to the summit, the vegan summit next year. But I also hope they think seriously about giving their money to something like this so-called animal rights conference that's happening in July. I think those sorts of events are not only, I mean, I would call them a waste of time, but they're worse than a waste of time. They're counterproductive. And so I would encourage everybody out there who's serious about veganism and serious about the abolition of animal exploitation, come to the conference that Bob is working his tail off to put on, the World Vegan Summit next year. Save your money for that and come to that and participate in that. And spend the 2.5 days or whatever we're going to be together really learning and absorbing everything you possibly can, because I think it's going to be a really terrific event. I'm looking forward to it. Something that's happened, Bob, that I'm really excited about, I actually wrote to you earlier in the week about it, and that is what used to be the Boston Vegan Association has now become the International Vegan Association. I've known those folks for some time. They brought me up to Boston a couple of years ago to do a talk, and also we spent a couple of days in a seminar room at Harvard talking about strategy and talking about where the movement goes from here. And the folks involved with it have now decided to expand their efforts and really start an abolitionist vegan organization called the International Vegan Association. And I really am very, very, very excited about it, and I recommend it to everyone. I think it's a terrific grassroots organization. You can go to their website at internationalvegan.org. They have a Facebook page. If you go to my Facebook page, The Abolitionist Approach, you can get the citation for that. You can get the URL for their Facebook page. But I'm really excited about that, and I support all grassroots efforts, in terms of groups that are really promoting abolition and veganism.
And that is our friend David, whom you referred me to.
Yes, indeed, David.
Okay, Eric. Okay. Because I was,
and I'm really excited about it. They've got a pamphlet out. Which they've had for some time. They did it a couple of years ago. I think it's one of the best, respecting animals. It's one of the best things out there. And they're focusing. You know, the idea of the organization is to educate people about how to educate about veganism and about abolition. And so it's obviously to educate the public, but also to educate animal advocates, because what we need to do is, we talked about this last week, it's just time to sort of forget about the movement. The movement ain't moving nowhere. It's dead. It's dead in the water. If it's moving anywhere, it's moving backward. The organized movement at the level of the corporate charities is just over with, dead. It's a disaster. It's beyond a disaster. So just forget about it. We've got to remake the movement. We've We've got to remake the movement, and that's what's going on now in terms of the grassroots advocacy. This is not going to happen at the level of organization. The most that any organization can do, and this is what I like about the International Vegan Association, it's rather than being an organization that wants to focus on itself, the idea is to empower individuals. This, I think, is absolutely crucial. We have got to empower individuals. We've got to get away from the idea that this is something that leaders can take us to, can lead. No one's going to lead the way here. We have all got to become leaders. We have all got to become educators. And, you know, one of the most frustrating things I find is that, you know, there's a lot of really great animal advocates out there, but, you know, they want to do something and they don't want to take the time to learn about what they need to learn about, so that when they do something, what they do is intelligently guided by the moral principles that they've decided are correct, that they've come to as a result of reasoning and thinking and logical argument. And this is what I really love about the International Vegan Association, that it's trying to educate people, get people to think clearly, so that their advocacy follows from their abolitionist vegan commitments. So I think that's good. To me, this is what the future is. The future is not going to be the bloated corporate charities. Those things are relics, basically. They're things of the past. What we need to look to now are grassroots organizations of individuals who are not looking to, you know, to pay themselves salaries or to, you know, to be money making organizations or whatnot. This is what we really need to do. We need to be focusing on individuals who are committed to this, and committed meaning what they're committed to do is not create a personality, an organizational personality, but rather to educate individuals, empower individuals, and get everybody to realize that this is not something leaders are going to do for us. This is something each of us must become a moral leader. Each of us must become an educator. And that is what I hope, Bob, will be. I mean, that's what I envision the goal and what I hope will be the accomplishment of your conference. And that is, it will provide two and a half or three, whatever, intense days where people will come together and learn. They will soak up a lot of information. And it is my hope that they will leave that conference all fired up, ready to go as creative, nonviolent vegan educators, because that's the only way we're gonna shift the paradigm, is by empowering individuals and not saying, oh, come and you know, honor our organization and give money to our organization and participate in our organization. No, get out there and do it. Don't look to somebody else to do it. That's what activism has become, Bob. Writing a check to one of these bloated charities. That's what activism is. Oh, you're upset about what's going on with animals? Well, write us a check. Answer that. Once that's what activism becomes, it's no longer activism. It is no longer activism. All it is just basically corporate support.
And it seems that promoting veganism is looked upon as not the best money-making, not the best business plan for some reason. They seem
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so... So I think, you know, these efforts, you know, the International Vegan Association, what you do, Bob, you know, I mean, that's what you've been trying to do actually for a number of years now, is empower individuals, educate individuals. And that's why I'm really excited about the conference coming up, because it's going to be, I think, an exciting opportunity to educate people, empower people, and get them away from the corporate model.
Right, right. And you know, I mean, that's the plan, to be activists for that and not, you know, that, oh, now hens can engage in natural behaviors in enriched cages. I mean, that's when my head exploded, you know, when I'm hearing people who are supposedly the animal activists saying, hey, you know, support the egg bill, support enriched cages, hens can engage in natural behaviors. And then you see stacks and stacks of battery cages in dark factories. And that's what they're being told by the major organizations. But now what I find interesting is the farm animal rights movement, which, whoops, I guess it's break time.
The music
of life. It's a vegan radio show. We want you to live and go vegan. We'll continue with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden coming up. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. I think I heard that somewhere before. We're talking with Professor Gary Francione. Earlier in the week, Professor Francione suggested to me that we should be calling for a boycott of this so-called animal rights conference coming up in Los Angeles in July. I mentioned it to some friends, and the friend said, "No, but we can't leave, you know, newcomers to the propagandists from, you know, HSUS and all the people who supported the egg bill and, you know, Happy Meat and all." And then Professor Francione just mentioned, "Well, you're giving money to this conference that features this racketeering Ringling Brothers clown organization, Humane Society of the United States." The speaker they have there usually goes around the country with a talk entitled "The Animals We Eat: Improving the Quality of Their Lives." So, you know, so what are you going to learn at that conference? How to give $16 million to Ringling Brothers. That's what you'll learn at this conference, you know.
Look, I have to tell you, I don't at all accept the argument that, well, you know, we can't leave the newcomers to these. I mean, because the opportunities to really talk about abolitionist veganism at that conference are pretty limited. I mean, I probably got the best opportunity of anybody, given that I was given a 1-hour plenary. But that's not going to happen. I just think it's a waste of time. It's a waste of money, and I think that I think people who care ought to vote with their feet, and they ought to be clear. This is not acceptable. Continuing to patronize these bloated corporate charities is, in my judgment, is just wrong. I want to mention one of the, you know, I mean, I gave a shout out to the International Vegan Association at internationalvegan.org in the first segment. Second, now I want to say something I think is sort of crazy. I've been asked by a number of people, you know, what do I think about this march for closing down slaughterhouses, which is going on in Paris and Toulouse and L.A. and Montreal and in New York and whatnot. I have to tell you, that's exactly the sort of thing which I think is confusing. I mean, look, there is no distinction, people. There is no distinction between meat and other animal products. Absolutely none. The idea that we focus on meat and that we, you know, we talk about closing down slaughterhouses. I mean, that's problematic in at least two respects. First, it suggests that the problem is meat. The problem is not meat. The problem is all animal products that we're consuming, that we're eating, that we're wearing, that we're using. And it's not just meat. But the second problem is that closing down the slaughterhouses, I mean, let's be real here. It's the problem isn't the slaughterhouse. The problem is the consumer demand that keeps the slaughterhouse open and running. So to say let's shut down the slaughterhouse is just plain absurd. How about let's educate, let's promote the education of veganism. Let's make it clear that veganism is the only way to shift the paradigm, that if animals matter morally, veganism is the only rational response. I have to tell you, I went to this website to look at this march to close down all the slaughterhouses. I confess, I did not spend a great deal of time on the website, but I did not see the word vegan show up anywhere. Now, it may be there.
See, that's where I can go for something like this if we always include the vegan message. Okay, because it's dramatic. It's dramatic. Let's shut down the slaughterhouses. Well, how do we do it? We go vegan. I mean, that has to, you know, accompany such a message, message.
I think with a lot of these things, you know, they want to bring the vegetarian crowd in. They want to bring the general animal friendly crowd in. I mean, I've had people on my Facebook page talking about how we've got to deal with the abuses in these slaughterhouses, and somebody who was supporting this thing. So that's what they're doing. They're trying to cast their net widely so that they can get. I mean, I'm assuming that's what they're doing.
But you don't shut down a slaughterhouse.
The people who organize this thing are even vegan themselves. But I mean, to me, this really just doesn't make any sense. All it's doing is reinforcing the idea that, you know, that there's a distinction between meat and other animal products, and that the problem is not the consumer demand. The problem is the slaughterhouses. They're bad. The slaughterhouses are bad. The answer is, yeah, the slaughterhouses are bad. The slaughterhouses exist for one reason, and that is because consumer demand keeps their doors open and keeps the slaughtering continuing.
Right.
They are indifferent. Sorry, Bob.
No, I'm agreeing with you. It's consumer demand that will eventually be what would shut down the slaughterhouses.
Yeah.
So
come to my website, abolitionistapproach.com, and the Facebook site.
Okay, sounds good. Talk next week. Thank you,
next
Professor
week,
Francione. Okay, thanks for listening. Love animals. Don't eat them. Go vegan.